should know that I've got you on my mind. Your secret admirer. I've been watching you. At night, I think of you. I want to be your lady, baby. If your game is on, give me a call, boo. If your love is strong, gotta give my all to you.
Go ahead, sis, take it away.
If your game is on, give me a call, boo. If your love is strong, gotta give my all to you. Every day I pray my heart can win. Every night I pray I can call you my man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Go ahead, sis.
I need you.
There you go.
To have you, hold you, squeeze you. So I'm going out every weekend just to see my boo again.
Yes! The original My Boo. That's not even, I don't even be thinking about Usher and Alicia with My Boo. I'd be like, no, that's not Usher and Alicia. That's Ghost Town DJ. Thank you very much.
Ghost Town DJ. What y'all know about that?
They don't.
They don't.
Praise some do, goodness. But some don't. Some are listening to this like, yeah. Or like Noah when she listens to Jade Next Z, which she shouldn't. I told her father letting her do that. I know. But I know. Okay. I told him. Cause they snuck it on. And since she'll come, she'll be like, I don't know what you all are talking about half the time, but it's funny. And I was like, stop listening. Stop it.
Oh, gosh.
I feel like Madonna. Praise the Lord, niggas.
How's everyone doing? How are you, sis?
I am well, actually. Like, good. I feel a little lighter.
Yes.
You know, we still 150 plus days, maybe 160 into a genocide. And so we're not letting up on that in Palestine. Okay. Because let us not forget what's happening in the Congo and Sudan and elsewhere. Happy Ramadan Mubarak to my Muslim brothers and sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Indeed.
You know, they are not able to celebrate how they normally do. And this is a very holy time for them in Gaza specifically. Muslims around the world, yes. But in Gaza specifically, they are not able to. And Sudan as well. You remember, there's many Muslim brothers and sisters all over the place. And so they're not able to celebrate the way that they normally would. And so, you know, we want to send extra love and hold them while that's happening. And yeah, we're going to keep calling it out. How are you?
Same. Doing okay. I'm safe and I have what I need.
That's it.
Recognizing that is not the case for everyone and honoring and holding space for that truth. But as I can say for myself that at the minimum, everything I need, I have. And I don't take that for granted. I'm very grateful for that.
That's it.
Hope that the same can be said for most of us listening, if not all of us. That's my prayer.
Yes, for sure. I've received.
Yeah.
But how are you doing?
How are you doing? Same, you know, working. I have some work travel coming up at the end of the month, so I'm getting ready for that. Things at work are just sort of like, you know, in sort of an upswing, but I feel like I'm getting better at managing, holding my boundaries. Working less on the weekends, you know, putting my
You told me the other day. Listen, I want y'all to know. Kia told me the other day. I'll let her share whatever later. I have a feeling that's what. But she was like, and today I'm not working because I deserve space and that peace. And I was like, that's what I'm going to motherfucking hear.
I'm getting better. Because, you know, it's true. And you look around and you see. You know, it's clear the imbalance of sort of labor, the imbalance of expectation, to sort of see it in ways that are just sort of undeniable. That has helped. That's been helpful to me, sort of understanding and really watching in real time how other folks are able to engage workspaces.
Yep.
It's like, well, what am I doing over here?
Jim and Floyd and them, you know, used to be going down to play golf,
honey,
at motherfucking 1 p.m. and have a scotch.
Because they take their time and they inappropriately do their things, you know,
catcall women
at their leisure.
So,
and somehow the work gets done, and sort of the level of expectation continues to sort of be felt in an inequitable way. Yeah. And so that has been helping me to call out and call attention to the ways that that shows up in my own practice. And hold myself accountable to, like, girl, no, you're going to tell them
that's
no,
right,
because you don't have capacity, because that falls outside the scope of your responsibility, because that's not something that you have to do, because that's somebody else's job.
You got to speak their language, sis. Next time, next time, tell them, say, I'm going to be taking a long lunch to go have a T-bone steak and a baked Alaska. You know, and when you talk to them in a gin and tonic,
baked
and then
Alaska,
they'll be like, oh, take all the time you need.
Baked Alaska. That makes me laugh because I'll be watching, you know, I'll be watching the Spring Baking Championship. The Spring Baking Championship just started.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes,
and I was getting caught up last week. And, you know, they was making, somebody made a baked Alaska. And I was like, that's not really a spring. But the challenge was, like, you have to make a non-conventional, like, spring dish, springy.
Okay.
And I don't feel like I feel like I've heard what a baked Alaska is, but it was the first time I sort of seen one executed.
Oh, with the meringue and yes, light it on fire.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And so it really gave, like, oh, I see how this is not conventionally a spring dessert, because it looks like a big s'more.
It, first of all, every all the, they used to all order, it used to be steak, beef Wellington,
beef
cherries
Wellington,
Jubilee, and a baked Alaska.
Beef Wellington, that's something.
That's just, that's the meal of old white boomers. And so you gotta speak old white boomer,
yes,
when
yes,
you want to take your space. I'm going to have a cherished Jubilee. Can you imagine the confusion?
It's like, how would a white man engage this moment? I'm going to.
Me, I just throw out every stereotype about old white men.
Exactly.
That's what they do. Shit. I'm doing it too. Fuck it. Fuck it. We see each other.
But how are you doing, sister? What's going on in your world?
In my world, we had the most fabulous birthday celebration.
Oh, yes,
I saw. For our production manager,
yes.
Mary.
Happy birthday, Mary.
Happy birthday, Mary. Mary, you know, Mary holds us down. You know what I'm saying? She been holding us down and, like, really,
absolutely,
really making sure that Kia and I feel supported. And we just want to send her great big love on her special day. So we celebrated Mary. Okay, let me tell you something. We have a black pastry chef, originally from Sierra Leone, here
nice,
in Brooklyn, named Jenna. And
is
Jenna
that who made the cake? I saw the cake on Instagram.
Yes, her company is called Pela, P-E-L-A-H, Pela Patisserie, and I will link it in the description box. Let me tell y'all something.
That cake looked really good. And you know that I'm like a fake baker because I be watching my baking shows.
She made a pistachio, sister, with lemon curd.
With what?
Exactly. So you, lemon curd on top. And everything is homemade and beautiful. And she incorporates botanicals. So
yes,
it's
very beautifully decorated. And I saw the cake after it was cut. Like, you know, I'm a fake bake. You know, I like to be a judge on the Spring Baking Championship. So I was like, you know, the sponge looks moist.
Yes.
And the curd was the right color and consistency.
Sister,
it looked like it was giving lemon.
The
you
proper
understand?
Pop of, like, you could tell it was zest. Like, ooh, it was just the
it wasn't
perfect
too
balance
acidic,
of flavor.
It was balanced. It was tart,
it was
but still sweet. I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my gosh. And you see how beautiful it was.
It was so good.
Okay, presentation.
I regret
presentation
that I
also
have
was
a slice,
giving.
But it looked amazing. It did.
Well, you will be having some of her cake soon.
Oh,
yes.
Well, can't wait.
Because, you know, we have a special occasion
we do.
Coming up.
Oh, and I love a pistachio. I don't know. I've never had a pistachio cake, but it sounds good.
You will. Mm-hmm. I'll order one.
I love
but
that.
We will be having some of her accoutrement,
her patisserie,
you know, as we celebrate one of our beloved dears. So
patisserie,
just yeah. But for all of you all who are in the tri-state area, check out Pela, PELAH. I believe it's Pela Kitchen on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And again, I will link Jenna in the description box because she is just incredible at what she does. I mean, I had an espresso dark chocolate cake not too long ago with pops of pomegranate. Like, get out of here. Get out of here.
Pops of pomegranate.
But that was a long way of saying I'm well, clearly. I'm well. And I'm not going to complain, like you said, because there's much to be grateful for. And if we burn out, then we can't. You know, we can't speak and fight on behalf of other people. So I've been really trying to hone in on that balance of making sure that I, you know, keep others at the forefront, but also making sure that I take care of myself in the meantime, because we've got to keep our strength also. So, I feel good today, actually. And I'm grateful that I feel good today.
We are glad about it. We are glad about it. And we have an amazing show.
Let me tell you something. We're about to dig into the cavities.
Listen, and okay? This is timely. I mean, high time, because for too long, we as a people have not been having the conversations that need to be had as it pertains to our health, especially as people with vagina. Okay, mm-hmm. Vagina, vaginas, mm-hmm. And we do not have
vagina.
But you know, we have an amazing guest, awesome OBGYN and content creator who has made communicating and teaching Black women about their bodies her life's work. You might know her down to the Instagrams and Twitters as Dr. Every Woman.
Oh,
it's all in her.
Okay, it's all in her.
Shaka Khan. Shaka Khan. So
I love being a Black woman.
Dr. Wendy will be joining us at the kitchen table, and we're going to have, you know, we're going to talk about the vagina from, you know, origin.
The poussoir.
We're talking about it from origin until it transcends into the menopausal retirement era.
I especially want to put a call out to all you niggas,
my lord,
who say click. I want you to really listen to this. I really want you to listen to this because, you know, I made sure to ask some real layman's ass questions for y'all, you know, and this is for my niggas who say click.
It's a the more you know kind of conversation.
If you know, you know.
Yes. And it's important because things change as we get older. We've been celebrating Women's History Month by being very open and honest about how we are evolving as women in all of the different ways. And so, you know, we talk about all things, you know, what it's like, you know, being in your 30s and in your 40s and negotiating the changes of your womanhood. And so it is a great, 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 great time. Dr. Wendy is a friend to the table, honey. She's very, very much at home at the table. She know how to have kitchen table talk. You hear?
Absolutely. And listen, we also want you to be informed that, and we touch on it in the kitchen table. This is Kia and I speak from this place as cisgendered women.
Yes.
So when we talk about womanhood and our changes and evolving, that is based off of our personal experience. But this conversation is for humans with vaginas. It's for people who want to know about vaginas. It's an informative conversation. And so we just want to make sure that, you know, everybody knows what's up.
So let's journey on over to the kitchen table for this awesome conversation with Dr. Every Woman. It's all in her.
Okay.
It's menstrual. All in me. All things vagine. Regine.
Regine. I feel like Regine would have been a good one to talk about periods with. All right.
Oh, yes.
On to Dr. Wendy.
Yeah.
We'll see y'all at the kitchen table.
Good times. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, Jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts. And not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen and gentlemen, to the Kitchen Table Talk. We have such an amazing guest this week. They're like, please stop introing people like that, Jade. But I can't help myself because they're amazing.
You'll have to deal with it. I don't know what
go look in the mirror. I don't know. Come on. So this week we have Dr. Wendy Goodall McDonald, who is an OBGYN and an all-around amazing Black woman with amazing accolades and amazing book titles to her name, such as Stethoscope Dreams, which is a children's book. And this one that made me audibly laugh, it smells just like popcorn. And I have questions about that, but we'll get to it. Welcome to the kitchen table.
The subtitle, it smells just like popcorn, the modern guide, the modern woman's A to Z guide to her vagina and beyond.
To her vagina.
Yes. Very important distinction. Welcome, Dr. Wendy.
Welcome, Dr. Wendy.
Thank you for having me, y'all. I appreciate the invite. I appreciate the opportunity to share. And yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
We appreciate you taking space and time.
You have been doing brilliant work on Blue Ivy's internet for a long, long time, but you were doing good work before that. So can you just start us off by telling us a little bit about your journey to where you are now? You can go, you know, as far and as deep as you like, but I know that you are a medical doctor by training. So tell us a little bit about your journey to where we are at the kitchen table today.
Well, let me start with just saying that Blue Ivy graced us with her birthday, which my mother somehow foreshadowed like 50 plus years earlier. So my mom knew Blue Ivy was going to be born on January 7th. So she was born on January 7th, which I thought was really thoughtful, you know, to really to think about that.
It's all coming she together. Decided to be magic. Born.
But anyway, that's not here nor there.
Our listeners will appreciate those shenanigans, by the way.
Right here. I am born and raised Chicagoan, born on the South Side. Grew up to parents, one from Mississippi, one from West Virginia. So, you know, kind of classic Chicago.
Great migration.
I mean, good and Black. Yes.
You know what I mean? Okay. Like, you know, they used to be like, you're country. I'm like, my parents' country. It's fine.
Very much.
Went to high school and all that in Chicago, at University of Chicago, but then went to Xavier in New Orleans for undergrad.
Hey.
So HBCU.
Yes.
And then came back up to Northwestern for med school. Did a residency in obstetrics and gynecology at Rush University Medical Center, and now work in private practice at Northwestern. Well, really, my private practice is called Women's Health Consulting, but we're affiliated with Northwestern. Deliver babies, do care for all people with vaginas, you know, from adolescence through geriatric, you know, ages. I like to call my seasoned patients because geriatric is just a term I just don't like to use.
I hate it.
And so, yeah, so adolescence through menopause, right? I've been on the interwebs since probably 2017, actually around the time that I wrote It Smells Just Like Popcorn. I had just had my third baby. Mm-hmm. And one of my patients came to me and was like, Doc, I got this smell, which is not an unfamiliar complaint.
Right. That's something like, that people say at the GYN.
Right? So I'm like, hey, what do you smell like? You know, we talking about what? You know, fish, mackerel, what we talking about? And she said,
Delicious.
Because, you know, and again, that's no shade. That's just what it is.
It's yeah, no, it's what it is. Oh, we'll talk about a funky pussy because I have a question. So
occasionally, you deal with such things, and I have no judgment.
Yeah.
And she goes, no, it smells like popcorn. And I audibly laughed. I was like, I'm like, what did you just say? And so, you know, and that wasn't right because I shouldn't be laughing at people, but it started this conversation in my head of like the many things that we don't talk about, that we don't know about our bodies. And part of why I even went into this specialty is because I, as a child, had questions about my body. And one of my good friends' mom was an OB-GYN. And she's the one who taught me. My mama loved my mama to death, but she didn't really teach me about my vagina. This other lady did. They didn't know. And that's okay. But like, so I was like, I'm going to be that person to teach people, if I can, about their bodies. And so this A to Z guide was like everything I could think of related to health and just trying to break it down. Cause people usually say, and I think, honestly, I think that part of why I break things down the way I do is because I do come from a household where there wasn't a lot of medical discussion. So then to go from that, you know, I'm believing some of the, I hate to call them wives' tales, cause some of the stuff is real, right? Like some things that people did back in the day work, but I come from not having the medical backing to now having that medical background. So I can kind of bring us from that A to B or to C. And so I wrote that book trying to, you know, bridge that gap and have just been doing it ever since, you know, out here clowning, you know.
Oh, we love that.
Which we appreciate.
My shenanigans.
You actually you said something really poignant that I wanted to bring up in conversation, but I think it's good to start off with this because Kia and I are the three of us on here are three cisgendered women. But I appreciate that you said people with vaginas because I wanted to make sure that we honored everybody. There are humans out here who have vaginas and reproductive systems, and they need to know just as well how that functions.
100%.
And we also got a lot of questions from listeners, which we'll get into in a little bit after we talk with you. But since we started off with that, I would love to know what the healthcare system, how that's being addressed with these changes happening and people being honored as who they are. Is that, do you find the medical system is upgrading with the world and its ideologies?
I would like to believe so. I like to think that many people in the healthcare community are much more progressive than probably our politics would make it seem. Our politics, I mean, as a country, right? I think that those who are in the healthcare community often are trying to advocate for, you know, equality and the discussions to be inclusive, you know, that kind of thing. You know, my conversation with any patient is, how would you like me to address you? And that can be the pronoun or that can just be the name. Like, what do you, how you want, what should we call you? I got you, whatever it is, you know, and then let's, you know, get into it. I've had patients who, you know, identified as men, who I've cared for, who I've delivered their children, you know, and it's really about being open to, you know, the person's comfort levels, not assuming things, you know, asking the reasonable questions, you know, in order to get the knowledge. And I think that as healthcare in the healthcare community, I hope that we are trying to do that across the board, as opposed to, again, making those assumptions and believing that everybody who, you know, says this believes this or that. You know what I mean? I just hope that there's more of that inclusive conversation happening. But I think it is. I think it's going that direction, at least.
I think that's awesome because outside of us needing to honor all humans, where you all are having challenges in the healthcare system, just you know, even with cisgendered people who are trying to have babies. I heard Alabama doctors are quitting all over the place.
Yeah.
You know, because of the laws.
Some legislation just kind of came out to try to like fix some of those issues. But I mean, it was the damage. Some of the damage has already been done. Like there are people in the middle of their IVF cycles who had to like stop everything. Yeah. And that's just so tragic, you know. For that to be the case. And then think about it on the flip side. There are people who don't want to be pregnant. I've had people come to me like, should I get my tubes taken out? Because I don't know which direction this is all going. And I don't know if I'm going to have access to contraception, you know, going forward. And it's like here in Illinois, we don't really worry too much about that. But who, you know, the sky's the limit out here. We don't know what we're going to need to worry about in the future.
It's a wild time.
We all watch Handmaid's Tale. We know.
It's a wild time to be alive.
It is.
But what I love about your content is how you are giving us tools and language and creating spaces where we can have the conversations that we need to have and ask the questions that we need to ask in safe and dignified ways, right? So I love the way that we are eliminating the stigma and the hush-hush about some of the things that we experience as people with vaginas. Mm-hmm. And it's just important to have those conversations. And I love that, you know, in addition to you serving your clients, you are also sharing your expertise with the world in that way. So just curious, I know you said you talked about your friend's mom who was OBGYN and that sort of sparking your interest. Mm-hmm. Have you always sort of knew that you were headed in that direction in your training, or was that something that, you know, was solidified in your adulthood? Tell me a little bit about that selection. I mean, you selecting that specialty.
Yeah, I mean, I was a child. And honestly, to get into it, I literally was a child who used to deal with a lot of like vulvar irritation. Mm-hmm. And come to find out from talking to my friend's mom, she's like, are you bathing in bubble baths? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh yeah, I got this little cute like perfume bubble bath I use. And she was like, boo-boo, no, uh-huh. you can't do that. You know, she, right. I literally remember her being like, sometimes some people can't just put anything in that space. Yes. And I was like, I was like probably 8,
yeah,
9. I was mm-hmm. young. And then I'm thinking, wait, so this is what your job is? Like, you literally study the body, like mechanics study cars.
I love that.
And, like, turn around and give that knowledge to people and like share that. I was like, okay, sign me up.
Yeah.
And so at that point, my parents, who were super supportive, they were not in healthcare at all, but they like bought me this human body model. This is back in the day. I'm gonna date myself, but back when we had like the MS-DOS computers and we was over here, you know, but you could like move this like body, you could move the little femur to the right place and like the heart to the right place. So I'm over here trying to look, you know, do stuff on computers, and I had the models. And then fast forward to going to Xavier, because Xavier is number one in the country for putting African Americans into med school. That was the only HBCU I applied to. And when I saw the stats, I was like, again, sign me up, stay less, you know? Mm-hmm. And then pretty much was talking to somebody about this today, got to med school, and everybody's like, don't be an OB-GYN, don't be an OB-GYN. Their lifestyle is terrible. You ain't gonna never like sleep. Babies are born all the time. You don't want that for yourself. Mm. And called myself trying to change my intention. Wanted to go into family medicine where I could like take care of women, but also take care of babies and also take care of adults, you know, older adults. And one of my mentors, Black woman, Tacoma McKnight, her name was Tacoma McKnight.
Yeah.
She's OB-GYN.
Very Black.
And this is like, this kind of Black I aspire to be, honestly, where like, I feel like I'm gentle with people. You know, if you want to do something, I'm like, okay, let's see how we can make that work. She was like, no, you're not doing that.
No,
and
he
was like, look at here.
Oh, she
might have to say, look at here.
We all need a Black woman to be like, girl, no.
She was like, no, you are not going to try to pretend that you can be everything to everybody. She said, you can be excellent at this. Stay right here. And I was like, okay, fine. So it was, but that was God too. Like,
Dr. McKnight.
Through her being like, that's cute. If you think you can, you know, water down my plan for you, now you're gonna stay right where you at. And that's what happened.
So is it okay? Is it OB-GYN, OB-GYN?
It's whatever you want to call it. It's all the things.
Okay.
It's obstetrics and gynecology. Obstetrics is the study and care of pregnant people. And gynecology is the study and care of people with vaginas or with uteruses. The gyne part is the like female component, right? Mm-hmm. People say OB-GYN, OB-GYNY, OB-GYN. Some people say gyno. I don't like gyno. It don't sound right to me, but you know, I answer to all of it.
I swear. You're like, I don't like it, but I'll
you know, that one's a little, my gyno.
Speaking of terminology.
Yes.
Remember I told you ahead of time, we got a lot of, we call them our GGBs, our getting grown brothers, husbands, brothers, you know, boyfriends, so forth and so on. Let's break down what a vagina is. Mm. Is it a vulva? Is it a vagina? We've got us who were not taught about every, you know, we kind of learned along the way, fallopian tube. There's, you know, we had health class. They don't do that anymore.
But
we had health class and all of that. I don't think so.
It depends on the school, because I teach my kids school health class, and some of them still get into it. I wish I had a model right now, but I'm going to explain it to you. Ready for this? Vagina is inside the body. Okay, that's my 15-year-old. He's like, the vagina. No, he can come and say hello. Tell him about the vagina.
He can come say hello.
Right, they know all the things. The vagina is inside the body. Mm-hmm. It's the tube inside the body. The uterus is what menstruation, the period comes out of. It's what houses mm-hmm. a pregnancy. And then there's the fallopian tubes that connect to the uterus, but also mm-hmm. bring in the egg so that, you know, the ovaries release the egg, the fallopian tubes bring it in, bring it into the uterus. That's where pregnancy could happen. Mm-hmm. The vagina comes mm-hmm. out. Now, the external component, the part mm-hmm. that you can see, is actually called the vulva. So mm-hmm. that's the labia, which are the lips, as people call them. It's the groin. Mm-hmm. It's the mons, which is the top. Anything that could carry hair, even if you don't have hair down there, that's mm-hmm. all vulva. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the differences in definition.
There are people with no hair? That's incredible.
Well, you know, some people don't carry, don't they shave it or wax it? And then there's the clitoris. Let us not naturally. Forget the most important part. There's the clitoris. Again.
Hello, let us not, okay? The one nerve you're allowed to get on.
Let us not glaze past that. That is beneath yeah, the very labia. Important. There's a hood. Yeah,
she's
and
very important.
That. Oh, and then I can't help because there's people out here. We have three holes as people with vaginas. We have one that we urinate out of.
Please
teach. The urethra.
Urethra.
Because the mm-hmm. bladder is connected to that. That's in front. The urethra's first, then the vagina, mm-hmm. then the anus. Mm-hmm. So those are our three. Yes. Urethra, vagina, anus.
In that order.
In that order.
In that order.
In that order. Very important.
Well, we have a number of questions from... listeners.
Yes, that I would like to start with mine, though. I want to get mine in.
Oh, yes, please.
So, you know, a lot of the things that were raised to me, the women in our demographic, as, you know, women who are 30 plus, some of us have crossed over to the 40s. You know, mm-hmm. I was sharing with Dr. Wendy and Jade as we were beginning. I feel very much like I'm in a fight. And I woke up one morning with a body that does not belong to me because all of the yeah. things that could change have changed. And mm-hmm. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around all of the ways in which the body evolves. Yeah. And, but also I want to also note that lately there has been an uptick in information and discussion on the internet about menopause, perimenopause, those yes. kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But if you are anything like me and you start to ask Googleisha these things, it's very, very, very easy for you to become overwhelmed because yes. everybody yes. is saying everything about menopause, perimenopause. So mm-hmm. I'm curious, just generally speaking, because I think, you know, I kind of grew up in a home with lots of women. And I remember these women having hot flashes or
yes.
maybe being a little irritable.
Yes.
But, you know, not really. There were no sort of in-depth discussions about all the things that were going on with them. Mm-hmm. And so now that I am in the throes of this major life change where I feel like everything I shared on the show last week, you know, my cycle used to be very regular. Now it is nothing but. I feel like I used to have a relationship with my birth control, even sort of like knowing if I take these pills, then these things would happen. But now it's like, okay, maybe not. I don't know. But gaining weight. I had my annual with my primary care physician. My cortisol levels were really super high. Yeah. And everybody is, you know, I'm always a cold nature person, but sometimes I sweat at night. And I was just thinking, oh, I just wrapped up in the blanket a little too tight. But it is like, no, I'm sweating through the sheets. Like, wow. this is different. So like, but still not having hot flashes as I see my mother have them. But when I ask my primary or even my gynecologist about this, it's just sort of everyone just this blanket term of perimenopause. All of these things I'm experiencing and everyone just sort of says, oh, girl, it's that time. Oh, girl, you get ready to start. And I don't know what that means. I don't even know where to go. Like, do I need to see? Like, I don't know. I'm just telling you my whole business. But the point that I'm trying to make is please teach us about perimenopause. Okay, so what is it?
I am in the process of actually writing a book about this.
Oh, praise God.
I was talking about a book, amen, hopefully that will debut in the next 12 months. But it was inspired by a person who asked me to do this and asked me to write down all the symptoms of menopause. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to probably be an index guide similar to popcorn. But I came up with 85 symptoms.
Ooh.
This I is came what up with 85 symptoms.
This is now, what I'm saying.
Now, does everybody have all of those symptoms?
No.
Not necessarily. So it sounds daunting. Mm-hmm. It sounds scary. But I'm not saying that every person who embarks on the menopausal journey will be bombarded with them all. But I am saying that there are a lot of symptoms that maybe aren't talked about as much. That if we maybe did at least bring the subject up, there would be a little less fear, a little less what is going on with me, a little more kind of like empowerment of the self-awareness component of it. I think it is important to kind of keep notes and to log what's going on. You know, I was talking to somebody today who's entering the perimenopausal space, and she was like, you know, how she's having hot flashes. And I was like, well, have you ever noticed any correlation with if you had coffee or if you had alcohol? She's like, ooh, maybe when I have wine. I'm like, alcohol is a known trigger, you know.
Wow. For some. Yes. Okay.
And so there are things that you may be able to kind of like realize, and then behavior modifications. And that don't mean you don't ever have alcohol again. It just means, you know, if you have some, your shit goes away tonight.
Like
you just expect you know, and that maybe, again, gives you that empowerment to not be as afraid of the unknown or what's going to come for you. The other thing is, and I don't know about y'all parents, but my mama had a hysterectomy.
Sure did. I mean, very early.
And 36, 37 years old.
And that was like the catch-all.
Yeah.
Probably until maybe 20 years ago, maybe 20, 30 years ago, where heavy bleeding, hysterectomy.
Yep.
You know, irregular bleeding, hysterectomy.
Fibroids of any kind.
Knees too hard, hysterectomy. Like, you literally was going to get a hysterectomy if there was anything going on, you know, related to your pelvic floor or your uterus. Now we have a lot more other options. And so that just leads people now probably even to having a longer experience with perimenopause, because the other thing is they was taking out people's ovaries left and right. Nowadays, even people with hysterectomies aren't always getting their ovaries removed, because ovaries are helpful. Ovaries help us with our bone health. They help us with our heart health. And so the symptoms and the duration of symptoms, we are in a generation now where we're going to experience what some of our parents never did.
Okay. Fair.
Yes. You know? Yes. Because, okay. So I have a question next. I have a fibroid. I got it checked last year. It's time for me to get it checked again.
Yeah.
It was not large.
Okay.
It was not invasive. It wasn't bothering me. But now I feel it a little bit more. Like, okay. I can see that it's present, which is why I'm like, okay, I know I need to go get this checked. Fibroids are a scary thing because, like you said, we saw our mothers getting full-blown hysterectomy. I remember when my mother had 9 fibroid tumors that they told her were grapefruit-sized. And if she didn't get them removed, she was going to get cancer.
Yeah.
So how do we, I don't even know what I'm trying to ask you right now. If you are fibroids, is it required for them to be removed? Like, can we talk a little bit more just about them in general? They're very, they're nuisances is what they are.
They are, they can be. So a couple of things. This is a whole conversation, like, in and of itself, but I'm going to just touch on a couple points that you even mentioned just now. One, fibroids do not become cancer. They do not become cancer. Fibroids, so 99% of the time, that's my dog, 99% of the time are benign. Okay? I told you
it was
dog
a white
was
man.
I told you that. He was right here.
He heard you.
Hey, Pooch. She called you up.
He literally came and then heard the kids downstairs, like, let me go see what they're doing.
And his name is Fife, correct?
His name is Fife. Fife dog, yeah.
I love that. Yeah. And my cat's name is Trill. I was like, look at these rapper ass cats.
I love it. These cats can form a group, low key. They really
I love
could.
It. They can.
They really could. Okay, so fibroids don't cause cancer, but fibroids can be problematic. They can cause heavy bleeding. They can cause pressure, pain. And so we remove or treat symptomatic fibroids. Symptomatic fibroids. Now, I completely subscribe with surveillance, because fibroids can also kind of creep up on you. And then suddenly when they're symptomatic, they're like, you know, innumerable and super big. So I do like the idea of keeping an eye on them, ultrasound every year, every couple years, every 6 months, depending on the person's symptoms. But they don't necessarily have to go anywhere. And again, I saw a patient today who was like, you might not remember this, but 2 years ago, I came to you because I had fibroids and my doctor said I needed to have my uterus removed. And you were like, no, you probably could just do okay with some birth control. And she said, and here I am 2 years later. My periods are gone now because her birth control worked until she hit menopause. Her fibroid has now shrunk like 2 centimeters. And she's like, I'm so glad that you told me leave it alone. And I said, because it wasn't bothering you. Like, if we wanted to get this under control, there's ways to get it under control without having to bring you under the knife. That doesn't mean hysterectomy doesn't have a place. Don't mistake what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
We do that sometimes too, but we have other options to mitigate those risks. And perimenopause or menopause is one of the few times that fibroids will shrink themselves. So if we can get there, we might be okay.
Interesting. Okay.
That don't mean bleed out until we get there, though, because somebody out here heard that and was like, oh, see, I can keep them for five more years. I can hemorrhage every month. That's not what I said.
No, what we're saying. It's very
because even I'm bleeding heavier now, and I don't like it.
Yeah.
And it's not where my mother was, because my mother was... Sorry, y'all. This is a lot of business today. But she was wearing a super tampon. She was wearing two overnight pads. She was wearing a pair of panties, some biker shorts, and jeans, and she would still bleed through.
Wow.
So clearly something had to be done.
But I'm not experiencing that, but I'm
experiencing heavier bleeding. You know, I'm noticing as time goes on a little bit more and more. So thank you for clearing that up.
Just jumped right into the perimenopause conversation, but I think one of the things that I am learning, and I think, you know, Jade's experience aligns, perimenopause is like a spectrum, right? It's not like, you know, sometimes we feel like menopause means that we're hit it and that's it.
Right.
I'm learning that there is a cycle. You can be in perimenopause for years before you enter menopause. So can you kind of explain the timing of these things? Because I've read things that say that you may start to experience some perimenopausal symptoms in your mid to late 30s. Sometimes you may not get them until your mid to late 40s. But either way, like, you know, it's a timeline. It's not sort of like a all or nothing. Can you talk a little bit about the timing?
So perimenopause only lasts for 6 months. I'm just playing. That's a whole lie. That's not true. That's not true at all. What? I'm sorry.
Clown it. Well, you've been clowning already.
All lies. All lies. So technically, by definition, menopause, let's start with the one that actually does have a timeline, right?
Menopause
requires 12 months of no menstrual cycle. You don't cross the burning sands of official menopause until you have had 12 months with no cycle. Anything before that is considered perimenopause. Anything after that is considered postmenopause.
Postmenopause. All right.
Okay.
So when you hit the 12 months, you like there for like a month and then you post?
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. And so that distinction is important because check this. Say you have no period for 12 months. Now when as gynecologists and just as healthcare providers, we often think about the most dangerous thing, right? So the most dangerous thing for me as a person thinking about somebody who's postmenopausal is cancer. So you hear the occasional person who's like, oh, my period was gone for 2 years and then my period came back. No, ma'am. Your period did not come back.
Wow.
Now we have to evaluate you to make sure you don't have uterine cancer because you should not be bleeding after menopause.
Oh, wow.
And if you are, the likelihood is it's not cancer. It may just be because of atrophy, because the estrogen levels are low, the tissues are thinner, and so they're more apt to bleed, or it could be cancer. So just wanted to start with that most important part, because you hear your auntie or somebody talking about, baby, I'm here, came back, and I'm 65. No, ma'am. Please go to the doctor. Ma'am.
And that's interesting. Okay. Because I had a cousin who would, like, because she had this 12 months makes sense because she would complain. Like, she would say she would go 11 months and then her period would come and the doctor would be like, oh, you got to start all over. And it's like,
start over.
So it's like, wow,
it starts over for like at 11 months.
Yes,
if you get a period, like, you're starting from month one.
Yes.
Wow.
You still have to go. So she would say that and be like,
wow, that's a cycle.
We never really understood. Like,
yeah.
Okay. But now that makes sense.
So that's finite.
Okay.
Now, if a person goes through that 12-month cycle before the age of 40, that's actually called premature ovarian failure. Before the age of 40, it's menopause, but it's premature. So it's premature ovarian failure. But anybody 40 or above who experiences that is going through menopause, and it just is happening earlier than, you know, the average. The average age of menopause is late 40s to early 50s. And the average duration you can hear is somewhere around 5 to 7 years on average of like symptoms here and there, or even postmenopausal symptoms of like hot flashes, night sweats. Some of those are often more intense for some years, even after menopause is declared. But the idea of like it, you know, lasting only a certain amount of time or being abnormal if it's longer than that. Like that is what's variable from person to person. You may even hear some people who say, oh, I went through menopause. I never had one hot flash. I never had one night sweat. Some people are blessed. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because it does happen, but that's almost luck of the draw as opposed to like they did something different than, you know, the next person.
So are the fluctuations or the things that we see in this perimenopausal state, is it just like your estrogen levels changing or is there something else happening that causes?
Yeah. Think about an engine that is, you know, been going all this time, humming and going. And next thing you know, it kind of does a little putt-putt, mm-hmm, you know, it starts for a little bit, then it kind of fizzles out. It starts again for a little bit and fizzles out. Like that's kind of what perimenopause is doing. It is the ovaries trying, and even one of the ways that we diagnose it, obviously there's symptoms, but we can also look at hormone levels. The pituitary gland, which is a gland in our brain, releases two hormones. It releases multiple hormones, but related to this conversation, FSH and LH, follicular stimulating hormone and luteinizing hormone, which are the hormones that make the ovaries ovulate and release estrogen. As you get into perimenopause, those FSH and LH levels go up and up and up. And my analogy is, it's like they're yelling at the ovaries, like, yo, work, like release an egg, do too. So then, you know, ovaries every so often, like, what? What do you say? Okay. And then they go back to sleep. You know what I mean? Like, what? Who's yelling at me? And they go back to sleep. So it is this constant communication until the ovaries are like, man, I'm done. Stop talking to me. You know, FSH, LH are still high. And eventually they all come down, including the estrogen levels. But it is a process at the point where the ovaries are essentially tuckering out.
Got it.
So that, but then it also affects our mentals because I'm sure our hormones, like you said, they're up and down.
So that's the irritability. That's the mental health. That's the anxiety. Yes. That's the panic attacks some people have. And then let's not even talk about the weight changes, the Lord fatigue, Jesus. The brain fog.
Yep.
You know, this can
my mother could not, she could not lose the weight that she normally could after she had her hysterectomy.
Yeah.
And she was working out the same. She was drinking the same amount of water, keeping the same regimen with diet and so forth.
Yeah.
But the weight was much harder to shed.
Yeah.
Once they gave her, why are hysterectomies so prevalent, or not hysterectomy, fibroids, why are they so prevalent among Black women? Is it just because we mostly know Black women, or is this really like a thing?
So Black women, yes. First of all, statistically, you know, humans with vaginas, humans with uteruses, the stats are that like 70 to 80% will have fibroids by the time they turn 50. I have fibroids. Fibroids are like pretty ubiquitous.
Okay.
The symptomatic fibroids are more prevalent in the African-American community. Why is that? Some of it has to do, we think, with just genetics. We think there is a relationship with vitamin D. Vitamin D deficiencies can correlate with increased fibroid growth. Weight, we're not the only ones with, you know, it's a general population with some weight issues, but weight does translate or can correlate with fibroid growth. Processed foods. I mean, let's talk about food deserts. You can get into that, right? Food deserts, processed food consumption, and to what degree that correlates with fibroid growth. I think that fibroids have been looked at even in the U.S. versus like African populations outside of the U.S. So I think there's still, again, that genetic component and possibly even some other confounders that we just don't really understand or know yet. But we, at least in the U.S., some of it has to do with lifestyle. Some of it has to do with chemical hair straighteners. I know I had a perm. I don't know anybody else.
That was the next question.
And my mama was permed down, and she had some significant fibroids as well. I mean, I gave mine up in college, but, you know, I had them. I had them too at that point.
I thought about that.
You know, I had them too at that point. So, you know, there's a lot of information we still need about fibroids, but I think there is some information that we can use to try to live better.
Oh my God, we have so much. We have so much to ask you with so little time left. With so little time left.
That means we got to do a part two. That's all that means.
Period.
No, absolute. No, in three, honestly, because period, menstrual, whatever. Like you have to come back and talk to us some more. You want to get into some of the questions, sis, or do you have some personal questions left?
Let's start those. Let's get into those questions.
Yes, let's get into some questions from listeners because they were very hype about you coming on and filled our inboxes quite quickly. So I'm pulling those up right now.
I love that.
Okay. This is a good question, I believe, because I feel like we got this a couple of times. How do we advocate for sedation if we have vaginal trauma?
Ooh,
Oh, wow.
Sorry, I should have trigger warned.
No, and I'm wondering, so I think about that. I think about that question. The next question I have when I think about that question is sedation for what? Are we talking about like exams? Are we talking about...
So the next question, because the next person was the same one. Why aren't vaginal procedures, i.e. colonoscopies, biopsies, mastectomies, oh, not mastectomies, what's the... Okay, colonoscopies.
Probably colposcopies.
Colposcopy, biopsy. How come they're not done under sedation? Those were the specific ones asked about.
Okay, so... To answer that question is challenging because it's almost like I don't want to defend that, if that makes any sense. I feel like I can try to explain it, but also not to say that that makes it right. Does that make any sense? Almost prefacing this statement. So, you know, we at least... So there's a couple components too that I can't help but bring up because I do obviously pap tests, I do colposcopies, I place IUDs, and I have tried to get anesthesia for IUD placement before and was told by the person's insurance that the patient will have to pay out of pocket for that because it's not a part of the, you know, indicated components of their, you know, of their care
coverage,
you know, just based on insurance coverage. And so it's like, well, you can do it, but your insurance isn't going to cover it. That's like, that's systems issues, right? That's system issues for that. I also do something called hysteroscopy, which is a scope that you put in the camera, a camera that you put in the uterus. And I know providers who do that without anesthesia, maybe with like local anesthesia, and some say their patients tolerate it well. I get like anesthesia for all of my patients who do that. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to put people through that, you know, if I don't have to, right? So I'm going to always advocate for my patient to get anesthesia for something like that, which is a camera in the uterus. A colposcopy, in my experience and when my care, is kind of a leveled up pap. Right. So a pap is where you take a little brush, you look at the cervix. Colposcopy, you're looking at the cervix a little bit longer. If you need to, you may have to take a little pinch from the cervix. The cervix, when I tell people, hey, I'm about to do this, either say they don't feel anything at all or they feel like a little pinch, you know, maybe even a little cramp. And 9 times out of 10, if that patient has had a colposcopy before, they tell me, oh, wow, that was a lot better than my last colposcopy. Matter of fact, somebody told me that last week. She said, I don't know what that last doctor was doing. So I don't know what everybody's out here doing either. You know what I mean?
Oh, I can tell you.
In my care, it
makes a difference.
In my care, I wouldn't want to put a person necessarily through the whole rigmarole of anesthesia and needing to, you know, be sedated, needing to have somebody take them home, needing to kind of recover for a colposcopy because I know what it takes for me to do that. But I would absolutely do that for something like a hysteroscopy, which is a little, which is another level up that some people would do without anesthesia, and you're not going to catch me doing that. You see what I'm saying? So like, it's also kind of like levels of procedures. Now I have a patient, another patient who is so challenging from a like vaginismus standpoint. Vaginismus is where a person has like their vagina, like they just can't open, won't open. They're afraid. There's all kinds of, you know, psychosocial components to this. And so I asked her even before we did her exam, I was like, you know, do you want me to even attempt the exam? And she's like, you can try. And I said, okay. And then we got to the point, I was like, should we just kind of abort mission? She's like, yes. I'm like, cool. She's like, I appreciate you for just talking me through it and like telling, you know, keeping me in control. I'm like, absolutely. This is a patient I am currently scheduling for an exam under anesthesia, literally a like pap and exam under anesthesia because she has a clinical diagnosis now where she's essentially cannot handle this outside of that space.
But
I don't know that that's everybody, if that makes sense.
Right. Absolutely. But that's all. But that's the problem, is that they treat us within the healthcare system like everybody is the same.
Right.
And everybody varies so much depending upon your life experiences, 100%. Your traumas, so forth and so on. So I think that hard and fast, I think it's disgusting the way that this works anyway. I had a OBGYN, a black woman, Dr. Worrell, was incredible. She made me feel the most comfortable I've ever felt. I then left corporate America and now I work for myself and I don't have good health care. And I can't even pay out of pocket to go see her because of however the laws are working.
Wow.
And so to hear that you put so much care into the patients who even have the means to come to see you, I think is really, really beautiful, especially since Black women have been tested on for years and we don't have anybody advocating for us. When I was pregnant and on Medicaid, I had a Russian doctor stick his whole forearm up my vagina to open my cervix.
Jesus.
That was so traumatic. Like, that was worse than me actually delivering my daughter. So people are out here wilding inside of our vaginas.
And
I can tell you
it's hard for me to even hear that because, like, it wasn't really until I was on social media and doing what I do that I start hearing these stories. And I'm like, surely people are not out here, you know, being disrespectful and not caring for people. And I'm like, wait, surely they are. Like, this is crazy what the story is right here. I got a whole viral thing, I don't know, this is some years ago, about, like, people having babies and not getting anesthesia to be sewn back up, like not getting like lidocaine, being told like, oh, you went through this, you know, without anesthesia, like you don't need it. And I'm like, are we barbaric out here? What are you talking about? Like, why don't you in the Pyxis down the hall? Why can't you grab it and inject that? Like, that's crazy. And
they told me I was going to give birth to my
Oh yeah, no, that happened to me too. I'm like, what? Like, what are you talking about?
No.
If we don't have no rooms available, you're going to deliver in triage. Like, they be saying wild stuff.
No, and I think it's not lost on me that, you know, I think Black women, just in terms of just the denying our humanity, it's very easy to just sort of overestimate our pain tolerance and not take our complaints seriously. So, yeah, thank you for that. There are a couple other questions here that I want to get into. I guess circling back to the perimenopause conversation, folks are asking about supplements. Are there things that are there supplements to take for perimenopausal symptoms? Are there things to do to mitigate? And I'm just thinking, and then you were talking about certain behavioral things that may be triggers. What are some things that we can sort of know about?
Well, let me start off by saying this, and this is definitely going to require a part two, but I'm going to just introduce it anyway because I think it's relevant. The perimenopausal symptoms that people are having all stem from one thing, a reduction in estrogen. That's where all of it's coming from, right? You're fine until your estrogen start acting sometimey. And then you start, you know, feeling and behaving, your body start behaving in a way that you're unfamiliar with. Now, what is that? Why am I saying that? Because at the end of the day, the gold standard for managing these symptoms is a replacement of estrogen. That's the gold standard. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying everybody needs that. I'm not going to you know, stand on this hill and be like HRT for everyone. But just know that that's the thing that the body is deprived of, that if we replaced it to a certain degree, most, if not all, of these symptoms will go away. Every other management option is essentially piecemeal. Right. Mm. So we can try to make the hot flashes feel a little better. You know, sometimes different supplements, there's a few that are somewhat evidence-based. And then there are some that people kind of like, you know, try that don't have as much evidence. And it's hard for me to be like, use this if I don't have a lot of evidence for it. But I'm not saying that there aren't things that one can try. Right. But, you know, for the hot flashes or for the vaginal dryness, we can try the vaginal, you know, moisturizers. For the weight, we can really go hard on the exercise and on the dietary changes. But at the end of the day, the hormones that are deficient could be replaced. And the stigma around HRT, I think, also boils back down to the patriarchy. I mean, some of it has to do with some misinformation that happened back in the 90s. But some of it is also that, like, women who are now experiencing this significant hormonal shift, you know, almost don't deserve to feel better or to get that. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's there's almost a feminism or an empowerment like that comes from just understanding that this is something that's significant in our bodies, and to try to, like, throw a little pebble at it, you know, maybe isn't doing it justice. As long as the person understands that that's what they're doing, then more power to it. Like, right? Like, do what you can to reduce your symptoms, but also know that you could have a more robust management that's still safe and still well tolerated. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay. Like, I'm just trying to, like, make people understand that there are options.
When you say HRT, you mean like hormone regulation therapy? Is that
I'm talking about hormone replacement therapy. I'm talking about estrogen, progestin, you know, that comes in various forms.
There are birth controls that have, you know, hormones in them. Does the body, like, as you age, might it just be that you need to change your birth control? Do they if you've been on a certain kind of birth control for so long, does the body just like build a tolerance? Like, how does this work?
No, but I think our body's receptive. I don't know if it's tolerance as much as our body's reception to that, or receptiveness to that might change. Like the intrinsic things that our body mm-hmm. needs change. So, you know, it's not that it's just not working anymore. It's not working for the same needs anymore. Yeah. And even mm-hmm. the difference between hormone replacement therapy and the birth control, the formulations are different.
Yeah.
The dose, the administration is different. Because there's ways to do it that are safer depending on the person's age, you know, but even before we get to perimenopause, like, you know, you mentioned you're entering into the early 40s. I'm 42, about to be 43. I made the switch long ago from a pill to an IUD, which mm-hmm. to me was a great solution to my cycles, to my, you know, I don't have cramps. My periods are essentially non-existent mm-hmm. at this point. And so mm-hmm. for me, that was better even than the pill at this stage in my life.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. so it does vary in the, and it does vary by the individual for sure.
That makes me feel better. My gynecologist suggested that. Y'all really getting all up in my purse right now, but I just share because I can.
Go ahead.
So we went, I got the IUD, but I don't have any children. I've never had children. And she was like, your cervix is small. And so I'm going in for an ultrasound to just sort of get the measurement, because she doesn't know how far to go with it. She just want to make sure that there's mm-hmm. no other issue. But, mm-hmm. you know, barring no other issue.
Right.
You know, that's probably the direction that I'm going to take for the reasons that you said. Because, you know, it could mm-hmm. just be that at this phase, you know, I might need to, you know, level up a little bit.
Change the approach a little bit. That's not uncommon.
Yeah, I think I need to swap mine out. Mm. I think we're actually at time.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay, there we go.
Unfortunately. And Dr. Wendy, you have to come back soon, because we got through like three questions.
And I was about to say, the girls have asked everything. Should they get a wax? Wax is caused irreparable harm. There's so many good.
Can I use coconut oil or not?
Like, can I use oil? So can I things. Use this? Is this going to ruin my vagina? Is this going to break it? We got lots to get into.
We have questions for days, but we know you have a full family to get to, and we're so grateful that you were able to take a few minutes with us and sit down. And
we're gonna have you back
just
soon.
Even pinch the start of this conversation, because I feel like we didn't even scratch the surface. We just got like the sand, the shore. We're at the shore.
And it's
so
20 questions here.
Absolutely.
Look, I would love to,
I got like,
you know, and see, when I come back, I ain't got to tell my whole life story. I could just get into it.
We'll just get to the shit
we
immediately.
Get right into it. We can just have a Q&A. Just have her back for Q&A part two, Q&A.
And Fife is welcome too, as well.
Absolutely.
So, you know.
Fife will make his way back into the conversation.
Fife was like, what y'all doing?
But in the meantime, we will make sure you all check out.
Yeah, he was like, are you going to take me out or what? That's what he was doing. He's like, you going to take me out? Are we going out?
Yeah,
he's like, hello?
We're going out soon, boy. We're going out soon. But I have nothing to do with that. We'll have all of your information in the description box so that people can check out all your books that are out, what's coming out, how they can stay tuned, check you out on social media, and we will have you back to the kitchen table as soon as you are ready to come. So thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. We're really grateful.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
You all stay tuned for the next segment. Just sit tight.
I deserve
What a rousing conversation with Dr. Wendy.
Oh my gosh.
And she's not will be back.
It ain't over.
Yes. She will be back directly, sooner than y'all think. But let's have a little Black woman self-care. And I would like to kick us off with, and I know that's right, if you'll allow me.
Yes.
I'm very excited and proud of myself. My I know that's right is for me. Because, you know, I transitioned into a new position about a year and a half ago, and it has been an illuminating transition. Mm-hmm. I'm learning a lot about myself. I'm learning about my work, and it was sort of a different phase. So you start in, you know, sometimes you got to start from the bottom and really work your way into a place and learn how it goes. And so I'm really head down contributing, you know, as best I can, leaning in, trying to negotiate this new position as a leader and someone who has, you know, perspective on the strategy and how we implement it. And I've been working very hard. And it's just a blessing to be, for folks to acknowledge the effort that you're putting in. And I learned last week that I have earned a high impact bonus for being highly effective.
Yes.
And I'm just very proud because this was a position not like anything that I've ever had before.
Mm-hmm.
And I really have been working hard to learn and to sort of bring my experience and my expertise, my scholarship, what I've been studying throughout the course of my career, and apply it to this strategy in a meaningful way that makes it practical, and positions me and my partners to move the work forward. And so I've been working my buns off, and it just feels good to sort of have leadership at the organization and other people on my team acknowledge that they see that I'm really trying. And I've had to negotiate different transitions, strategy refreshes, and just the learning curve of being on this side. I've sort of made my bones in my career as a program administrator of grant-funded programs. So to transition to the philanthropic side and think about this work from the perspective of funding it and thinking about what kinds of support the partners that we fund need, it's really been a surreal blessing for me to sort of see myself bloom in this way. And I really feel like, you know, I don't know what the future holds, but I kind of feel like I'm hitting my stride and being like I've been put where I belong. And that feels really good. And so
I love that.
I'm grateful to be Dr. Kia and to be in the room where it happens.
Listen, I know that's right. And you have been, Kia texted us in the group chat talking about, I've been on my Miranda Priestley.
I have.
And we were like, I know that's right. That's what you need to be doing. Okay? Show them the bitch you can be. And look, and they like it. They said, you get shit done.
They was like, you need to say more. We need to hear from you more, girl. Tell us all a little bit more. And I'm like, you know what? Yeah. I got plenty of that.
They like that. They're like, yeah, I like when you pinch my nipples. Like, they like that. They like that.
No, I'm so proud of you. It has been empowering in a way to sort of, you know, say it with my chest, to be unafraid to sort of speak up and say, well, actually, I think that we can do it this way, or have we thought about this? And I'm not sitting in the room saying I know everything and they know nothing, but it does feel good to sort of say I have experience and knowledge about a thing. So let me act like that and let me be a subject matter expert in a room. And so that feels good. I've not always felt like that, but now I recognize that that is the seat that I'm sitting in this period of my life. And so I'm going to do my best to stand up in it.
I know that's right.
I love that. Oh, I love that, sis. I'm so proud of you.
God is good. I appreciate that. Let me know.
I'm so, so proud of you.
What is your Black woman self-care? Or do you have a I know that's right?
Definitely not an I know that's right.
I know that's right.
Self-care. Ugh. It's stereotypical, but also it's not, because I have been in a funk. Like, all my friends make fun of me. I told you, they all make fun of me. Every time they call me, they're like, what are you doing? I'm cleaning up. They're like, you always cleaning up. There ain't nothing left to clean up.
Because you do be organizing this every day.
I do. And like, but then also stuff just gets overwhelming over again. And I also realized, like, I don't really deal with seasonal depression, but this winter was especially heavy. And so I didn't realize how much it had weighed on my spirit until recently, which was affecting my productivity, me setting my routines. Remember, I said I wanted to, like, focus on my bedtime routines and working out and, like, all of those things. And I was delayed. But also, I didn't feel fully delayed because, you know, my personal New Year's, the spring equinox.
Yes, and it is coming. Fastly and it approaching.
Oh, next week. Oh, God. Or 2 weeks. The 19th. The 19th is when it comes. But I felt something breaking a little bit. And so I told you we had Mary's birthday. Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know, you can't be having people up in your house if you're looking crazy. And you got to also make sure. I was like, so this is not just because people are coming over, but like, I want to get the systems I've been talking about so much. Let like get them in fucking place.
Yes.
And I think this is the first big relief, the first big relief. That I felt this year and like feeling some things move because things were feeling just very heavy and overwhelming. And so I felt a bit of a break in that. And that was very nice and very much needed because I was like, I don't know how much more of this I can take.
I hear that.
So, yeah, that's it. That's my self-care. I was like, this feels good. And then being able to host, you know, some of my good girlfriends just felt good. And
aw, Jay, being the domestic. Able
to, I am quite domestic. I like to love up on my people. I'm not going to really buy you gifts. It's not because I'm cheap. It's because it's a lot of pressure. And I, you know, if I see something and it's like organically, okay, this immediately made me think of such and such, I will get it. But outside of that, that's not my personal love language. But I am, I will celebrate you. I will deck it out for you. I will prepare all the hors d'oeuvres.
You will clean.
I will host you. I will make you feel like the royalty that you are.
Yes. Yes.
If
and
I
we
love
love
you.
That about you. but we also want you to also know that you are also worthy of folks serving you.
Thank
so
you,
we
sister.
Don't want you to feel like you have to. And we know that your training and very much who you are has been in food service. But, you know, you deserve us to sort of do that for you too, so you don't have to do it all the time. But I'm just grateful because I know that
I appreciate
it is that. Also something that fills your cup.
Right? It does.
It fills
I enjoy
your cup,
it.
So I'm grateful.
Oh,
that
Mary
you...
was bitching the whole time. She'll hear this. She was like, "I wanted to hang out," and I was like, "Yeah, I'm almost done. Like, you go hang out. Like, I'm actually like, I don't feel stressed.
No.
I enjoy this. I'm gonna keep replenishing y'all's cheese platter and." Bring you more heavy bites.
I love it.
I love it. If y'all want to chat with me, come in the kitchen, roll up a blunt by the window. Like, we good. Like, it's good. It's nothing. But no, that does. That it fills my cup to love up on my people. Like, it makes me feel good. So.
Yeah. And that's amazing.
That's my self-care. I got to love up on some of my... and then I have one homegirl who had 5 kids.
Oh.
And let me tell you something. She's the most phenomenal mother.
I mean,
the most phenomenal mother. And every time we get together, she goes to sleep.
Oh, because she needs
so,
it.
Because mm-hmm. she needs it.
She's
and that's
tired.
When we talked. We were like, you know what? She feels safe.
Get your nap
so, like,
in, girl.
Feeding my people and letting them take a nap on the couch. And when Fury came for Thanksgiving, that nigga sprawled out on his stomach. I said it then. Do you know
year.
How safe a nigga has to
he
feel to sleep on his stomach at your house? Like,
when
on his stomach, that's vulnerable.
When he is finished eating, he is just going to take his rest right there.
And I want the people that I love to feel safe and to know that
I
it is okay for
us.
Them to take their rest.
Yes, indeed.
So that was my self-care. Shut the fuck up. Is it those dogs?
I'm like, what is that? What kind of siren
I don't
is that?
Know. Every time I hear something, fuck Kathy Hochul. Fuck Eric Adams.
Jesus.
They got the National Guard out here. What is wrong with you all?
We are. Molly, you in danger, girl.
I told you, it's a George Orwell novel. It's a Margaret Atwood novel. Like, we are living in dystopian times. And a Black Mirror episode. A Black Mirror hell season. Oh. You heard that nasty-ass siren? What was that?
I don't
know.
It
sounded
like
emphysema.
A UFO. I'm like, what kind of siren is that?
It sound like an old nigga siren.
Oh my god!
Trying to get itself together. Anyway, well, now that we've ended that on a negative note, let's head over to the petty peeves. I think this is perfect alignment.
Let's do it.
And I want to be very responsible of the things I say to my sister, because everybody know I can be real petty. P-E to the T-T-Y, honey.
All right, y'all. It's time for the petty peeves. And I'm going to get informative this week because I learned something that I want to share.
Jeez.
So, you know, I was getting eyelash extensions for a little bit. started getting them for like a project or something we did. And then I was like, then I just kept going. And because then you start feeling bald headed of the eyes. And then it's like, girl, you can't get used to this. So I stopped doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I found my happy medium. I go to a wonderful Black woman by the name of Jazz Imani. Mm-hmm. She has a studio in New York and she has a studio in L.A. And I get my eyelashes tinted and lifted.
Nice.
Because, so, you know, when I first went there, she was like, okay, what's your goal? And I was like, well, you know, I want them to grow. So I want it to be healthy. Like, I was like, but, you know, I got these fat ass eyelids and I feel like I don't have. And she's like, you actually have long eyelashes. You just have hooded eyes. I was like, yeah, fat ass eyelids. And she was like, so this will be helpful. She's like, but also she focuses on the care of your eyelashes, the aftercare, you know, what you do throughout, not just in the couple of days post. And so I go for my appointment and you only go like every 2 months. Nice. So I go for my appointment. And I'm laying down and she goes, did you cut your eyelashes? And I said, no. I was like, why would I do that? She was like, have you used the eyelash curler? I was like, I'm gonna be honest with you. I've never been comfortable with those.
I don't even know how that works.
No. I was like, I don't like the
thought that I
some about that thing pinching your eye. I don't like it. So she and I was like, no, I've never used the eyelash curler. She was like, and you didn't cut your eyelashes. I was like, no. Like, she's like, you have like a blunt cut to your eyelashes. And she's like, nah, I'm not going to freak you out. I'm not telling you you don't have eyelashes. I'm not telling you like you won't be able to see it. She goes, but I've been working on your eyelashes now for 6 months. And I know your progress. I know that you have long eyelashes. And I know what I'm seeing right now. I was like, no, you the profesh. So she said, it looks like you blunt cut your eyelashes. So when I tell you I'm confused, I'm sitting, we are talking through this. I was like, did I light a blunt and accidentally singe my eyelashes? Like, what did I do? She's like, no, they don't look like a singe. They look like a cut. So we're talking, finally figured it out. She's like, you told me you don't use mascara regularly. I said, I don't. I was like, and since I've seen you, I've probably only worn makeup like 3 times total in the last 2 months. I was like, and those are the only times I would have worn mascara as well. I was like, the only thing I can think differently is I switched to Too Faced waterproof mascara because of my hooded eyes, my mascara will transfer to my eyelids. And so she was like, that's it right there. And so I was like, what? She goes, first of all, waterproof mascara dries the shit out of your eyebrows, eyelashes. She's like, the same way, like when you sleep with your hair on a cotton pillowcase, eventually it can start to break your hair, which is why you should have a bonnet, a satin pillowcase. She's like, waterproof mascara dries them out so much they can break. She was like, she's like, how are you removing? I said, micellar water. And then I use the Dermalogica pre-cleanse, the oil, and then I use the wash. She goes, okay, you're doing all the right steps. She's like, and you're gentle when you take it off. I was like, very. She goes, and that mascara specifically is for an eyelash technician who focuses on the health of eyelashes. I hate it. She's like, I hate it. And so I was like, I'm going home to burn my mascara because it broke my eyelashes.
Well, that is very disheartening.
Right? It broke my eyelashes, which is absolutely nuts.
And it's just the waterproof. It's just the waterproof one.
Yeah. It's the waterproof that's especially like hard on your eyelashes because it dries them out so much because it's not supposed to run and stuff. You should be able to swim with it and all those things, but it's not good for the health of your eyelashes. I know. And then it's especially harsh when you're taking it off because of the scientific elements of what's in it to keep it waterproof. You have to be a little more intensive when you remove it, which then can cause extra damage. I just learned all of this.
So much.
Nuts. Nuts. Whew. I was like, my eyelashes broke like the back of your hair. And she was like, yes. She's like, it's not so crazy that you will notice it, but I notice it. She's like, so I need you to not be using that any longer.
I mean, and then throw it away. All of it.
Uh-huh. Next time I'll come back with a approved list of mascaras that. But what I did call up our dear sis Nikki mm-hmm. of NL Makeup / Plentiful Brows. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, these fat ass eyelids, how do I keep this mascara? She was like, she's like, listen, your eyelashes are what they are. She's like, eventually, you know, you let it dry, you can use a spoolie to remove. But she told me to help prep it and like maybe less transfer is to put some translucent powder on my mm-hmm. eyelids. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then once I put the mascara, you know, do it slow, put it on and use my little fan and let it dry.
You gotta
and then, you know, just be really, you know, I just have to be more meticulous when yeah. I do my, and then the translucent powder on the eyelids.
Translucent powder is sort of like, you know, what we can do to lock everything in.
Yes. Yes.
You have to know how to apply it correctly because if yeah. not, you're going to give ghost face killer. But.
Oh, I know. I know.
When applied appropriately, it is mm-hmm. one of the great panaceas of all makeup problems or challenges.
If Listen.
But it is the trick of sort of just knowing proper use and application. It's really what's going to be.
I got a full lesson from Nikki.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know to set the shot, I have to you do the translucent powder on the concealer
it's
where
important.
Your concealer is before you do your powder.
Yes.
Powder,
because, finishing you know, powder, translucent
exactly.
powder. You better know the differences. I'm proud of you. You better
Thank
know.
You. You know I can do a basic face on
yes.
myself, but it don't get much more than that.
We've come a long way.
And I'm sad because I'm going to use the rest of what I got here. But I use the Charlotte. Do I use Charlotte Tilbury?
Charlotte Tilbury.
I use Charlotte Tilbury translucent powder and finishing spray. But she is a full blown staunch vocal Zionist. So I won't be purchasing. I won't be purchasing any more Charlotte Tilbury.
I did not
sure
know
won't.
That.
She is. But I also use the other primer. I use is I don't use her primer. But I can find
use the finishing spray.
I use the finishing spray. And I believe, is it the Charlotte Tilbury translucent powder? Is that who that is?
I have a small finishing powder from her. It's not translucent, but it's just a small compact press powder that I will use under my eyes.
Mama
but
is a staunch Zionist.
I don't have any of her translucent powder. My favorite translucent powder is Dermablend.
Oh, good to know.
We should have Nikki on. We should talk.
Yeah, so we can talk about makeup tips and things.
The makeup.
Because Nikki's put me on, like, when I want to do dewy and light, I use the Danessa Myricks, and I use the Glowy Dew Foundation, you know, and then I just use the Tinted Moisturizer. But if I want to go light but heavier coverage than light, you know, then we use the Pat McGrath.
Yes.
But then if I want to go a little heavier, I use my NARS, you know.
We should have a our makeup kit episode.
Absolutely.
Have
Let's
Nikki
do that
come
soon.
And give us some lessons. That
yes.
would be fun.
Yes, that's what we're doing. What's your petty peeve?
My petty peeve is that I had the grave misfortune of catching up on Love is Blind this weekend.
Oh, man. Everybody can't stop talking about this.
And I won't get into this because I'm feeling like maybe, I don't know. I don't want to overpromise, but I feel mm-hmm. like we might need to have more of a pointed conversation down to the Patreon once we really
sure.
get through the episodes, because the season is complete and now we just have to have the reunion. My petty peeve is I don't understand why people who are not ready to be married go on a show where marriage is the outcome. And the process. I mean, everything about the show is you know, everyone going into Love is Blind knows that you're going to meet in this pod. You won't even be, you don't move to the next phase unless there is a proposal.
Mm-hmm.
And so for anyone mm-hmm. to go through this process, weeks, I think it's like 4 or 5 weeks in total, 4 to 6 weeks in total, to go through this process, to do this social experiment, to testing whether or not love is really blind. We know that the outcome, the end is always a wedding. So to get to a wedding and say, I'm not ready to be married.
is crazy.
Is wild to me. Like, I just, yeah. Wild.
Wow, well, that's no different than that. What's that season that we watched?
Of Married at First Sight.
With Paige. Yes.
Married at First Sight.
That nigga didn't have any business near a woman at all.
And there that, was like, another, on a TV show or there's or another elsewhere. Young man who does not have any
Because they
business.
Want to get on TV, sister, and they want to show off their ankles and their
And
loafers.
I understand that.
And they don't mind ruining people's lives in the interim.
I also feel like, I just want y'all to hear me out. We can have more of a conversation about this. But I am also now of the belief that there needs to be an age requirement to be on this show. I don't think that it is wise or prudent or reasonable for people who are 22 and 24 years old. Be sitting up on these couches talking about what they ready for. It's like, girl, no, you girl, you're not. Girl. And I hate to sound ageist and like the old auntie that I am.
Sister, I was 22 and engaged and it did not pan out. And I can tell you very poignantly, no,
but I
they
just
don't
feel,
need to be on there.
My grandparents got married at 20 and 21, but that was in 1953.
That's when my parents had me.
I'm just saying that in 2024.
Yeah. That's not the same.
I don't believe anyone is really, really ready to understand or wrap their mind totally around what it means to be fully and committed to a person. And to even set them up even further by saying that they only have 7 days to build a relationship with this person, sight unseen. I just feel like it's a setup. It's a recipe. And maybe I would feel a little bit better about it if we were dealing with full-fledged adults.
And even then, you put a 40-year-old cis, 40, 45-year-old cisgendered heterosexual man on there, you're going to face another batch of issues of this nigga being stuck in his ways.
Well, yes, that's a fair point. But I'm just saying, I just wonder
or suffering
how
from
much
a smidge of arrested development. But
how much of the trauma and toxicity that exists on this show is a function of it being a bunch of kids?
Oh, a great majority, I'm
a
sure.
A great deal, I
a
would
great
imagine.
Majority. Yeah.
And I'm sure that, you know, Nick and Vanessa, you know, it makes for decent television. We're all in it. We're all watching
the
same
couple.
Car wreck. We're all watching it happen. So
you know
get
who they
that.
Need to have? Y'all need to get Kira and Kevin to come host one of these, okay? That is the couple that everybody needs to listen to. Not Nick and Nick and Jessica.
You starting some mess. Okay.
I forget, sister. Like, that's the era that I know. If you say that nigga's name, I'm like, Jessica Simpson, Chicken of the Sea.
That's the one. And you know, Jessica Simpson was out here talking about Chicken of the Sea.
Is it tuna or is it chicken? Okay, so, for our young people, because you know there's a small percentage of you all.
They can
once
find,
upon a time
find the clip on YouTube.
There was a show on MTV. This is when reality TV was starting to get its roll
just
on.
Getting good and going.
And so Nick Lachey, who you all see on this Love Is Blind, was married to Jessica Simpson. Yes, the lady who makes shoes.
Now.
And she was once
she
upon a time
a pop starlet.
Singer.
Yes.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay. Didn't quite hit Britney Spears levels.
Nah.
But she got to sell shoes.
Listen,
and she
down
was,
to the
you
Lord
know,
and Taylor and the
enjoyable.
Macy's.
Enjoyable.
Yes. Had an era. Okay.
Yeah, had a little sister who married Ashley. Diana Ross's son. She sang a song called Pieces of Me. So anyway.
In the pieces of me. Pieces of me.
So Jessica and Nick had a reality show where they were newlyweds. And Jessica Simpson, you know, they did not paint her in the brightest light. Sometimes she did not paint herself in the brightest light.
I'm about to
light.
Say, I don't know if they
and
did
so,
it.
No, well, this was fully her on this part.
Yes.
And so she comes with a can of tuna. And remember, Starkist's slogan is Chicken of the Sea. And so she was like, it says Chicken of the Sea. So is it chicken or is it tuna? And this was a long conversation as well as a very large conversation socially, even though I don't feel like social media had popped like that. I don't think so either.
But I remember us watching it. Like, is this serious in real life?
Like, is she? And that was the thing. And so when I think of Nick Lachey, I think of Jessica Simpson. Because I don't really know nothing about that other lady.
I don't either.
She was a VJ.
I think so, from down to the TRL or something. To
right? Not Su Shin Park. What's her name?
Su Vanessa Shin Hutchins.
Vanessa Hutchins.
Oh. No, I thought Vanessa Hutchins just announced that she was pregnant down to the Oscars.
Wait, what's the lady's name he's married to?
Vanessa Lachey. Let me see what her name used to be.
Vanessa Diva.
She used to be, okay, let me go down to her Wikipedia's. She was on Total Request Live and Entertainment Tonight.
Yes. She was a VJ.
Mm-hmm. Oh, her mom was from the Philippines and her daddy was born in Cleveland.
I don't know why that...
Her father moved, okay, he was in the Air Force.
Okay.
So they were military brats, and she moved around quite a bit when her parents divorced.
Is her father, Philip, what is he?
No, it says Vincent Charles Manillo is an American citizen who was born in Cleveland while her mother was born in Manila, Philippines.
Yeah, it's always an army nigga who goes and gets them a lady from the Philippines. My cousin did the same thing.
Fair.
Niggas living in Manila now.
Yeah, because after the mother divorced, she relocated her and her brother to Turkey, where she, you know, lived with their stepfather.
Ooh, delicious food.
And so they returned after Desert Shield. So they were over there in the Persian Gulf.
Oh, so learning so much about you, Vanessa Hutchins.
I know. So she was, okay, she did Miss South Carolina Teen USA, and she won Miss Teen USA in 1998.
Oh, she looked like a pageant type.
Yes.
So yeah, she got that.
She worked at MTV from 2003 to 2007, and she did that morning after show, and then she also did Total Request Live.
That's probably where she first met Nick.
Yeah, she then when became he was, a correspondent when he was in for the, Entertainment Tonight. And then she hosted Miss Teen USA and Miss Universe. After
what group was he in?
Okay, yeah.
What group was he in?
He was in 98 Degrees.
Thank you. I was like, not Backstreet Boys. 98 Degrees. Mm-hmm. I don't even know any of their songs.
Me neither. They had one big one that I feel like if I really try hard enough, I could remember it.
While we're looking up mindless things, I'll just take a gander at it. Why not?
It said she started dating Nick Lachey after she appeared in the video for his song What's Left of Me. The couple became engaged in November 2010 and they married in July 2011 in the British Virgin Islands. Now, when did he leave Jessica?
Oh, wait, are they not allowed to release any of their music? Because it is not on. They have only their Christmas album on Tidal.
Okay, so he divorced Vanessa. No, he divorced Jessica in 2006. He didn't marry Vanessa until 2011.
Oh, here we go. Okay, I think it was probably this is no their number one there. Most popular song. Hold on.
It's tearing up my heart. That's not them.
No, that's NSYNC.
Whoops.
It's called I Do Cherish You.
No idea. That's not the one I was thinking about.
No, I don't know that, but it sounds like niggas was trying to be boys to men. Well, I'm not getting ready to listen to a gaggle of 98 Degrees songs. This was informative. But what was more informative was our conversation with Dr. Wendy. Thank you,
Dr. Wendy,
so much for coming and sitting with us at the kitchen table. You all, we are actively planning part two, and we're not like not right down now. The road. We're actively planning part two so that we can continue to get more information out there for all of us.
Yes.
Because we didn't get to half the shit. Me and Kia, and we were double dutching between our fibroids and our fucking
Peri. We had
Peri.
Our own questions. I got perimenopause. Like, hello,
wait, Peri? Okay, so with Peri, fibroids. I'm like, well, with fibroids.
It was more of a personal consultation. But we will get to your questions.
We will. I still have more, but we will get to your questions. And we will have more discussion with Dr. Wendy. Make sure you all check out the description box. It has all of her information so that you can go and find her for yourself. And make sure you stay tuned for part two. We're so grateful that she joined us. Thank you all for listening to us each and every week. Make sure you check out the Patreon where you get the audio and visual versions of this show ad free, ad limited, whatever. And sis, take them out. Tell them what to do.
Make sure that you are keeping your mind moisturized by attending to the business that is yours and yours alone. You also want to make sure that you're keeping your insides moisturized by drinking just as much water as your body can sustain. Okay, which is quite a great deal. Okay,
a lot.
It's actually more likely that you're not drinking enough. So drink a little bit more. Okay. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And finally, you want to make sure that you are moisturizing your skin because that's your largest organ.
Yes.
And it will crack if it's dry.
And so will your vagina.
Bye. Reggie.